Translation, Shonaka Rishi said, let us know, please, what topics were discussed between Vidura and Maitreya, who talked on transcendental subjects, and what was inquired by Vidura and replied by Maitreya. Also, please let us know the reason for Vidura's giving up the connection of his family members and why he again came home. Please also let us know the activities of Vidura while he was in the places of pilgrimage. So it's the purport's over a page, so let's see how we go. Sri Suta Goswami was narrating the topics of creation and destruction of the material world, but it appears that the rishis headed by Shonaka were more inclined to hear of the transcendental subjects, which are on a higher level than the physical, because as you may recall a few verses ago, that Suta Goswami was about to narrate the description of the Padmakalpa. This Padmakalpa is the last kalpa of the first half of the day of Brahma. And he was just about to discuss that, and then we see that Shonaka Rishi said, well, tell us about Vidura, because if you recall, in the 13th chapter of the first canto, then Suta Goswami talks about how Vidura gave up home, and then he came back later. And they found that interesting. They found it sort of piqued their interest. And similar to what happened with Parikshit Maharaj, because in the fourth chapter of the first canto, it talks about Parikshit Maharaj and introduces, and then a little bit later introduces the topics of the Bhagavatam, and they really wanted to hear that, but the Bhagavatam, the plot seems to meander a bit sometimes, going, you know, and there's a lot of backstories that are being discussed and things like that. So it wasn't again till the 12th chapter of the first canto that we see that the sages again were inquiring, well, tell us more about Parikshit. We want to know about his birth, his activities, things like that. So then in the 12th chapter, half the 12th chapter is just talking about the qualities of Parikshit. And then we find again in the 17th and the 18th chapter of the Bhagavatam, of the first canto, it talks about Parikshit Maharaj. And the reason there is very similar to the reason here is because we see that the exchange between Parikshit and Sukadev Goswami was a transcendental discussion. And we see that Parikshit perfected himself through that discussion. And I was reflecting about this on the way up here. I remember when I was growing up in Australia in the 60s, and there was quite a number of famous British bands in Australia. I won't go into the names of them because probably bring up all sorts of strange memories here too. But they were really famous, and they had like fan clubs, and you could write into the fan club and you get a photograph or something sent back or whatever, all sorts of stuff like that. And it was kind of interesting, and they had had television shows and things like this, and used to see all these bands up on the screen. But people were asking things about, they were attracted by their haircut, by their smile, by their facial features, whatever, what type of cars they had, who they're having sex with. There's all it's all very external. And people are very much interested in how much money they have, what do they do with their money, things like that. But we see here that the sages at Namishwaranya, they're not interested in things like that. They couldn't care. It's of no interest to them, all this external stuff. But actually, what they're interested to know is, what did they talk about? Because the subjects they spoke about were transcendental subjects, and the subjects they spoke about were meant for the benefit of the entire world, that everyone would gain benefit from hearing these subject matters. And this is why the sages in Namishwaranya, this is why they're asking, they want to know more about Parikshit. Okay, it's really interesting to hear about the members of the Pandavas and the Kuru dynasty and things like that. But really, what we want to know is, we want to hear about what was discussed between Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami. And also here, they're asking again, we want to know what was discussed between Maitreya and Vidura. Why? Because these subjects are the subjects which will bring about emancipation. These subjects are the subjects which will benefit the entire world. And if we reflect back to the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it describes there how the sages had sat down at Naimisharanya. For what reason? What were they doing there? Yeah, doing a 1,000-year yagya. What was the purpose of the yagya? To benefit humanity. This was their purpose, was to act for the benefit of humanity. And we see at the end of the, I think it's the end of the third chapter, or maybe it's the fourth chapter, I don't remember. There's this Krishna Swara Dhammapada Bhagate Dana Gamadi Kalanashta Jishamasha Puranaka Dhanodaraha. That this Bhagavad Purana is as brilliant as the sun. And it has arisen just after the departure of Krishna, accompanied with knowledge, religion, etc., to give light to the people who are bewildered by the darkness of this age. So they're seeing that the sages of Naimisharanya, from this statement from Suta Goswami, have understood that the Bhagavatam is the most beneficial thing. Therefore, they're eager to facilitate the manifestation of the Bhagavatam. And one of the most important aspects of the Bhagavatam is transcendental knowledge. And so they're eager to hear the transcendental knowledge, because we see when Parikshit Maharaj, when he was involved in this conversation with, or he participated in the conversation with Sukadeva Goswami, he achieved realization. He achieved God realization, and he came to the point where he was able to go back home to Godhead without any fear. And he understood, as we see, he understood from Sukadeva what was actually the duty of a person who's about to die. That they should always hear about, they should always speak about, and they should always remember the activities of the Supreme Person. This is Bhagavan Ishvaro Hari, it says, the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see the same thing here. This is the conclusion of this section of the first and second canto, which we understood to be, they're known as Padma, the lotus feet of the Lord. And now we're moving on to the legs, and the next two cantos, the full third and fourth canto, are just discussing this conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. Of course, in the beginning, we see there's the beginning few chapters is between Vidura and Uddhava, which is a very, very sweet discussion. But then it moves on. Then Uddhava directs Vidura to go to Maitreya, because he just, he was overwhelmed with separation from Krishna, and he couldn't speak anymore. And so he directs him to go to Maitreya, and also because Maitreya was his senior. And then they discuss Shaga, Vishaga, they discuss the manifestation of Varaha, I think. And then it gets into an extensive conversation between, in the fourth canto, between Kapila and Devahuti. So again, there are more deep discussions on transcendental subject matters. Very, very wonderful discussion. But we see here, like the whole intent of the sages is they're not like being rude and interrupting, Shonak Rishi. They want to hear. They've got this thirst to hear about these transcendental subject matters. They want to know. And also we see in the fourth chapter, it's described, I think it's the fourth, maybe it's later, I can't remember. But anyway, it's in the first canto, how Sutta describes this conversation that took place, between Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, and he mentions that I was there. And I was listening with rapt attention, and I was enlightened, I was inspired by this conversation, and I actually understood the Bhagavatam through this conversation. So, because initially when they start off, they're just, the sages are just sitting down in Naimisharanya to perform fruitive yoga. It's karma kanda what they're going to practice. But from hearing this discussion, from hearing the topics from Suta Goswami, their hearts become purified. And then they want to discuss, they want to hear the transcendental subject matter, because they realize, okay, these fruitive yagas, they're going to have some benefit, but it's limited. But the transcendental subject matter, the benefit of this is unlimited, and everyone benefits from this. You know, the speaker benefits, the hearer benefits. Just like we see, it mentions how both Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj achieve perfection through this process of hearing and chanting. This is described in, by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So they're very much inspired to hear about this subject. There are two classes of men, namely those addicted to the gross body and the material world, and others on the higher level who are interested more in transcendental knowledge. So this is the sages of Navasharanya. They're not interested in these external things. They're interested in transcendental knowledge because they understand that this is the supreme benefit. This is how we get the supreme benefit in life, is to understand the topics of Krishna, to discuss Krishna, to hear about Krishna, and to understand the topics of Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam gives facility to everyone, both to the materialists and to the transcendentalists. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of the Lord's glorious activities, both in the material world and in the transcendental world, men can derive equal benefit. The materialists are more interested in the physical laws and how they are acting, and they see wonders in those physical glamours. And we see that the Bhagavatam, the fifth canto, discusses extensively the structure of the material world. And you know, people have an interest in that. And it talks about, all the different, the 14 planetary systems, where we're situated. It talks about, how the Earth, the Earth's on a plane, and there's, all these different dvipas and oceans and things like that. And so, for some people, this is very, very interesting. And the Bhagavatam gives the absolute conclusion, but of course it's very difficult to understand. And actually, I think in the beginning of the fifth canto, there's a verse where it mentions there that even if you live for the day of Brahma, you won't be able to understand the structure of the universe, because there's a lot of seemingly contradictory information there, but it's not really contradictory, but it's just with our sort of limited intellect, very, very difficult to understand. Where do we get up to? Sometimes due to physical glamours, they forget the glories of the Lord. They should know definitely that the physical activities and their wonders are all initiated by the Lord. The rose in the garden gradually takes its shape and color to become beautiful and sweet, not by blind physical law, although it appears like that. And for someone who's not understanding how things function, they think it all just goes on automatically. There's just, it just happens. It's all by chance. Now, I remember an interesting story that Sri Prahlad told me many years ago. Newton, he was a physicist, but he was also apparently a believer in God, a believer in higher reality. And so he had this model of the universe built, the material concept of the model of the universe built in his, because he was having a conversation, actually I'll go back a bit, he was having a conversation with his friend, and he was trying to explain to him that everything had a cause. But his friend was adamant that no, it just happens by chance. And this is, somewhat, a widely held view by many scientists, that it's all just random combination of elements, random, whatever happens is quite random. But Newton was trying to convince his friend that actually, no, it's all by design. It's all by superior intelligence. And so what happened is he had a model of the universe built in his living room, and then he invited his friend to come over and see it. And it was a very, very amazing model, and he was asking his friend, well, but how did this come about? And he said, well, just I walked down into the living room there this morning, and there it was. It just happened. And his friend was saying, no, that couldn't be the case. He said, you must have had this made. And he said, no, it just happened. And then he said to his, then he said to Isaac, his friend said to Isaac Newton, he said, nothing happens by chance. And that was Isaac Newton said, that's exactly my point. Even the universe doesn't happen by chance. It's all by design. There's someone who puts it into motion. And we see that Prabhupada would say that not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. And Krishna himself, he says in the Gita, in the 10th chapter, in one of the key, the Chaturslokya of the Gita, that I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. And the wise, you know, someone who's actually wise understands this and worships Krishna with all his heart. But those who are foolish think it's all by chance, and therefore why should I worship God? What's he got to do with it anyhow? It's all happened by chance. And this is the materialistic perception, that it all happens by chance. Or they might think there's some, you know, physical laws that are forcing things to happen and stuff like that. But they don't see the hand of God. And the whole second chapter, or second canto, we're going through, it talks about, you know, how the universal form was manifested, and from the universal form came so many aspects of the creation, and how the various planets are residing on the various parts of the body of the Lord, and etc. like that. And then it goes into discussing the Brahman and then the super soul. And essentially, the whole second chapter is talking, sorry, the whole second canto is talking about the various 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. Sometimes devotees think that, you know, the Bhagavatam successively discusses the 10 topics, but actually you'll see the 10 topics are occurring all throughout the Bhagavatam. And we see in this one canto, all 10 topics are being discussed. Right now we're coming to the summum bonum, being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's all being discussed. And the point being there is that it's showing how everything that is generated ultimately comes from Krishna. It's all orchestrated by Krishna. And someone who's intelligent will study the Bhagavatam. Someone who's intelligent will study the science and understand how it's all coming from Krishna. And this was Prabhupada's main criticism of the scientists. He didn't get so much into their theories and stuff, but really what he was focusing on is, okay, it may have happened like this, it may have happened like that. That's not really important. The important thing is, why do you deny Krishna? Why do you deny that Krishna is the cause? And this is the thing, you know, for devotees, we understand that everything is coming from Krishna. You know, as he says, aham savasya prabho mata savam pravartate, that I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything expands out of his energies. You know, it either expands from him directly, or then it comes from one of his energies, or an expansion from Krishna, or expansion from expansion, or, you know, a plenary expansion, or partial expansion. There's so many different ways Krishna expands. Parashya shakti vividaya shuryate, he expands in so many different ways. And these energies are actually what is manifesting everything, the spiritual world, the material world. And Krishna himself is not involved. He expands himself into Balaram. Balaram expands into another form, who expands into another form, expands into another form, and from that form he glances and the universe is created. He stirs the whole thing into motion. And this is the nature of Krishna, this is the potency of Krishna, that simply by his thought process, everything, and it's not even him directly, it's a portion of a portion of a plenary portion. So, you know, simply by this thought process, the whole material creation is manifest. And not just this one planet or this one universe, but the whole creation with many, many millions of universes. It describes how with Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, when he lies down in the causal ocean and he goes into mystic slumber, then so many countless millions of universes are coming out of the pores of his skin, like just like bubbles. Like sometimes when you go to the, I was in Barcelona just recently, and we were doing a Harinam through the streets. Barcelona is a really great place for Harinam because the whole center of Barcelona, there's no cars. It's all just walking streets. And so I remember we were coming up past this, there's a really nice cathedral there, and we were coming up past the cathedral, and there was this guy, you know, I think he's probably selling something, but he had these bubble making things. You know, we dipped it in the soapy water, and he held it up, and the air was just blowing through it, and so many hundreds of bubbles were just going up in the air. And I was thinking, this is just like the universe. The universe is when Karana Dakshaya Vishnu lies down the ocean, how the universe is just coming out of the pores of his skin, just like bubbles, just flowing. Millions and millions and billions of universes just coming out like that. And this is just by a thought process of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This whole thing happens. So you can imagine, like, okay, like when they were building the Haveli, how much effort went into building the Haveli, how much conscious design and thought and labor went into building the Haveli. It was a big, big endeavor and took many people a lot of effort, a lot of thought. But Krishna, he just has a simple thought in his form as Karan Akshay Vishnu, and the whole thing stirs into motion. So how powerful is that? Okay, let me finish the purport. Behind the rose in the garden gradually takes its shape and colour to become beautiful and sweet, but not by blind physical law, although it appears like that. Behind the physical law is the direction of the complete consciousness of the Supreme Lord. And it's interesting that Prabhupada uses this phrase, complete consciousness, because our consciousness obviously is not complete. There's things missing, but everything is there within Krishna. Otherwise, things cannot take shape so systematically. The artist draws a picture of a rose very nicely with all attention and artistic sense, and yet it does not become as perfect as the real rose. If that is the real fact, how can we say that the real rose has taken its shape without intelligence behind the beauty? So, we see the artist has to put so much thought and effort into drawing or painting a rose. So we can see it, the picture didn't happen, just like these paintings on the wall. They don't just happen. You don't just find them on the street. No, someone's taken the effort to paint them. And a lot of effort. I have a friend in Australia, Ram Prasad. He's quite an accomplished artist. He's painted quite a few of the Bhagavatam pictures. And he's painting all the time. And he puts a lot of effort, a lot of thought. Sometimes the hand's not quite right. He'll change the hand, or the pose of Krishna's not quite right. He'll change the pose, to get it right. A lot of thought, a lot of effort, a lot of time. Like weeks, months he puts into each painting. So we don't think that this has happened automatically. So why is it that people think, why is it we think that what's going on in this universe happens automatically? No, it's all going on by the arrangement of the Supreme Artist Krishna. This sort of conclusion is due to a poor fund of knowledge. One must know from the above description of creation and annihilation that the Supreme Consciousness, being omnipresent, can take care of everything with perfect attention. That is the fact of the omnipresence of the Supreme Lord. Persons still more foolish than the gross materialists, however, and it's interesting how Prabhupada says still more foolish, claim to be transcendentalists and claim to have such supreme, all-pervading consciousness, but offer no proof. They're claiming, I'm God, I'm this, I'm that. But where's the proof? Show us how you're God. Manifest a small thing like a fly. You can't even do that. But you're claiming to be God. I remember years ago, I was visiting a friend's house, and she had this little box on the wall with two doors, and we're having some philosophical conversation, and she said, if you want to see God, open the doors on that box. And I opened the doors and there was a mirror there. Really? Is that simple? I can become God just by looking in the mirror? Where's the proof of being God? Lift Govardhan Hill. Like Prabhupada describes in the Krishna book, how Krishna held Govardhan Hill aloft above his head for 7 days, like a small child holds a frog's umbrella. Frog's umbrella means a toadstool. I mean, it's so easy to, you could hold, a toadstool. I mean, you could probably hold your hand up there like for 10 minutes or something, but after a while your arm would start getting really tired. Or you can imagine something like holding this microphone stand up, if your right hand is strong with your right hand, for an hour or two or three. You couldn't do it. But he held this mountain above his head for 7 days. That's extraordinary. We can't do things like that. Yet, people claim to be God. Well, show me how you're God. Do something wonderful. Don't just talk. Because that's all it is. It's just useless talk. But they can't actually prove it. And that's why Prabhupada says they're even more foolish than the materialists, because they think, they actually believe they're God. but they've got no proof of it. Such foolish persons cannot even know what is going on behind the next wall. Do we know what's going on in the next room right now? We could guess, but we don't know. Yet they are falsely proud of possessing the cosmic, all-pervading consciousness of the Supreme Person. For them also, hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam is a great help. So Prabhupada's making this point here that Bhagavatam is so beneficial for everyone. That whether you're gross materialist, whether you're a foolish transcendentalist who thinks you're God, read the Bhagavatam. Then you'll actually understand the real situation. You'll understand you're not God, for sure. It will open their eyes to see that simply by claiming supreme consciousness, one does not become supremely conscious. One has to prove in the physical world that he has such supreme consciousness. The rishis, or Naimisharanya, however, were above the gross materialists and the false transcendentalists, and thus they were always anxious to know the real truth in transcendental matters, as discussed by authorities. So this is the essence here, really, is that the sages of Naimisharanya, they were anxious, they were eager, enthusiastic to understand what is the transcendental message that was discussed by Vidura and Maitreya, the same as they were eager to know the message discussed between Parikit and Shukadeva Goswami, because they understood how beneficial this message was. They weren't wasting time with, as we see it talks in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, is how the Bhagavatam kicks out all this Kaitava Dharma, this cheating religion. And that's this whole idea of what's being presented by this foolish or false transcendentalist that I am God. This is just cheating religion. And we see how it's quite common that people are regularly cheated by these people claiming to be God, that they can manifest some tiny illusion or whatever, or a little bit of ash or a little bit of gold or something like that in their hand, and people, oh, they must be God. Like there's that, there's some interesting stories, I'm not sure where they're from, about Guru Pramatha and his foolish disciples. And one time one of the disciples there was a guy in a tree and he was cutting the tree, and this devotee comes along and says to him, actually, if you keep going like that, because what he was doing, he was sitting on the branch, but he was cutting on the branch on the side closest to the tree. So anyone with half a brain realizes you keep doing that, the tree's going to break, and you're going to fall on the ground. The branch will break. And so he said this to the guy who's cutting the tree. And he said, don't bother me, go away, I know what I'm doing. Yeah? And then so he keeps going, and sure enough, he fell on the ground. He goes, oh my God, he must be a greatly realized sage or something, He can see the future. So he runs after him and sort of approaches him like that. So there's many stories like that in this sort of, I don't know where it's from, but they're really interesting stories. And how these foolish people, they see things happen and they conclude incorrectly what the reality is. But by studying the Bhagavatam, by reading the Bhagavatam, especially by hearing it from realized souls, we can actually understand the truth about this material world, the truth about ourselves, and the truth about the spiritual world, and what our destination needs to be. And that's why these conversations are so important. And we'll see as we go through the third and fourth canto, there's many, many wonderful discussions like Vidura and Uddhava. Uddhava, he's talking about Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan. Then he talks about Krishna's pastimes inside of Vrindavan. And then when he starts talking about Krishna's pastimes, he becomes overwhelmed by separation. And he's showing us how we need to develop this attachment for hearing about Krishna's pastimes. And then later on, we get into the discussion of Devahuti and Kapila. And the same thing there is through Sankhya Yoga, through this analytical study of the material creation. Kapila Dev shows how ultimately the goal is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and to develop this attraction for hearing about Krishna's pastimes. Okay, so it's a very, very interesting section of the Bhagavatam. Any questions, comments at all? Yes, Will.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Narasingha Kavach Prabhu, for a wonderful class. Just a reflection on the point you made towards the end, that how when you read about these pastimes, the creation, and how Bhagavatam is actually relevant for everybody, whether it is a new person or devotee. So I'm feeling very encouraged to hear that, because one of the things we've been trying to vigorously at the manor is to distribute a lot of Bhagavatam sets. And a lot of times we have people come up to and say, well, this is a Paramahamsa Samhita, and you know, how are you giving it out? So, and when I read it, there are things which I come across and think this would be helpful for someone even who's new, actually. So I'm feeling very inspired to hear from you that, yes, Bhagavatam can be relevant for everyone. So just want to say thank you, Prabhu.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I mentioned, there's that verse in the first canto where it says, Krishne swa dhamma bhagate, dhamma gyana visa, kalo nasta dushamasa, puranakal dhamma, that those persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of ignorance in this age of Kali will get light from this Purana. But if you think of that, who does that refer to? Who's lost their vision in this age of Kali? Everyone. So the Bhagavatam is making that claim that everyone has lost their way. Everyone is floundering in this material world, thinking so many foolish things about this, what the goal of life is, you know. Like when I was growing up, the goal of life was to have a nice car, a house in the suburbs, a swimming pool in the backyard, you know, a car and a boat in the garage. And that's what everyone was aspiring for. But I remember, like, I was working at one place, and like all the guys there were kind of like, that was their aspiration. And I was sort of like, you know, going along with the flow, thinking, oh yeah, that's the way to go. But then I heard about it wasn't someone at work, but someone knew about this guy who had everything you could want, you know, beautiful wife, you know, 4-bedroom house in the suburbs, swimming pool in the backyard, car and a boat in the garage, and debt up to here. You know? And he lost his job and he committed suicide because he couldn't pay the bills. And that got me thinking, it's like, really? Is that what we want in life? Is that really the goal of our life, is to have those things and be in debt to the bank for the next 20 or 30 or 40 years? And just basically, like, you know, it's like now, it's like, you know, people have got their Netflix subscription, they've got their what subscription, they've got their internet connection, blah, 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 you know, all these types of things. So they're connected and they've got the fast, optic fiber connection, et cetera, et cetera. But basically all they're doing is they're working to pay all these bills, to keep all these things going. They're not improving their quality of life. They're not actually, you know, gaining anything long term from it. They're just making sure that they pay all their subscriptions. Yeah? And like, you look at all the software you buy nowadays, yeah? It used to be you just pay for it once and you got it, you know? And now and then you might pay for an upgrade. But now everything's subscription based. So you spend your life chained to this company. You know, you work just to keep these companies going. Is that life? Is that really worth a life worth living? That you just spend your whole life working to pay for these, you know, make these people in these companies rich? No. It's not what life's about. And this is why the Bhagavatam is so important, because it shows us that this is not what life is for. Life is meant for hearing and chanting about Krishna. Life is meant for understanding that you're not this material body, you're Krishna's eternal servant. And Bhagavatam will help us to see that. Okay, anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So in this verse, Prabhupada says that there's these foolish people who think they are God, yeah? And I remember I heard a story once that Prabhupada was speaking with some of his disciples, and he was talking about impersonalism. And then the devotees were like, oh, yeah, yeah, the impersonalist. And then he said, no, don't misunderstand me. I'm talking about you. You know? So I was just wondering if in this case, also when it talks about foolish people who think they are God, should we also take it for us, even though we are devotees? Or like, you know.
It's interesting you ask that, because Merle and I were discussing the same kind of concepts coming up here. How, you know, and Merle Madhava was just reading something in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, yeah? Which is a similar point to what's being said here. And so we see in the scriptures, these things are repeatedly being stated. And we're thinking, you know, we're thinking, oh, it doesn't apply to me, it applies to somebody else. But actually, no, it applies to me. It's just like, okay, talk about deity worship, for instance. Deity worship, one of the main points of deity worship is how to cultivate a personal relationship with Krishna. But you'll see so many devotees, when they're serving Krishna, aren't doing that. Because if they're trying to cultivate a personal relationship with Krishna, when they're dressing Krishna, would they stick him with a pin? It's like, you wouldn't do something like that, you know? Or, you know, if you actually understand the process of worship and how it functions, you'll see how it is a personal exchange. How all these things we do in deity worship, they're not just a ritual. If you think it's a ritual, then you don't understand at all. You know, okay, they are rituals per se, but they have a purpose. And they are actually part of Krishna's daily activities in the spiritual world. You know, like even you see in the Govinda Lilamrita, it describes all these different aspects that we do in deity worship, but in a very, very personal way, and how the Dham and all the residents of the Dham are offering all these items of worship to Krishna. So all these statements in the Gita, all these statements in the Bhagavatam are meant for you and me. They're not for somebody else. Yeah? They're meant for every one of us, because we're all doing these things. You know? And the fact that we're doing these things, or the proof of it, is the fact that we're here in the material world. Because if we were actually, you know, acting in the proper way, we wouldn't be here. Unless you're an acharya who's descended to, you know, to guide people back to the spiritual world like Srila Prabhupada. So yeah, all these statements are here for you and me, to show us how we need to become, to show us where we are now. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitai Gopremanandi Hari Om.